are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Today, we're going to hit a couple of quick news items off the top. Then we'll get into three more members of our countdown of the top 20 Wolves of all time. We're on number 6, number 5, and number 4 today. But first, a quick reminder to please subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. The updates for today are more, hey, make sure to check this out, than they are actual updates. There aren't any updates related to coronavirus or the NBA's response or the Timberwolves' response to the pandemic at this point. But I did think it was important to mention a couple of really good articles out there from some of our friends in the local media in the Twin Cities. First, John Krasinski. We typically will mention his articles here on this podcast as they're pretty good deep dives into the team at The Athletic. If you do have an Athletic subscription, be sure to check out the profile he did on Greg Farnham, who longtime Timberwolves fans will know he's been with the team now for legitimately for 20 years. He joined the team in the year 2000, has been an all-star trainer, a trainer at the all-star game. He's been a Team USA trainer a couple of different times, including when the team won the gold medal in Rio. And just, you know, has survived multiple front office regimes, multiple head coaching changes, and really interesting profile. There's some quotes from former players in it. Kevin Love. There's some Robert Covington comments. Of course, Gerson Rosas gave some comments as well, just with the calming presence that Farnham is and the reason why he stuck along so long or stuck around so long, I should say, in Minnesota. So be sure to check that out. It's a really good read. And then the other piece I would say to make sure to look at would be Chris Hines' mailbag that he did at the Star Tribune. And he solicited some questions on Twitter and via email from fans that cover the restricted free agency question for both Malik Beasley and Juancho Hernan Gomez that we've talked about pretty much at length here. He even throws out some numbers as possibilities for both players for the Timberwolves. We'll get back into that later once we're done with this series where we're talking about best Timberwolves players of all time. We'll get back into the conversation of restricted free agency in the upcoming offseason here in a little bit. But in the meantime, that's a really good place to check it out. Somebody who is a little bit plugged into the team that has some thoughts on what those contract offers could look like. All right, we're going to go ahead and get right into our continuing our countdown of the top 20 players in Timberwolves history. I'm not going to go through parameters again. I actually did it on, I think, the last three podcasts. So if you haven't listened to one of the previous episodes, a couple of reasons for you to do that. One, I'll go into my parameters for why I'm selecting the players where I am on this list. And then also you'll have the opportunity to listen to my explanation for each player instead of just hearing me rattle off the list so far, which I'm about to do, because some of these without context might be a little bit surprising as I go through it. So number 20 was Joe Smith, number 19, Gorgui Dieng, number 18, Anthony Peeler, 17, Rasho Nesterovic, 16, Andrew Wiggins, number 15, Pooh Richardson, 14, Doug West, 13, Big Al Jefferson, number 12, Nikola Pekovic, number 11, Christian Laettner. And then on yesterday's episode, we talked through number 10, Terrell Brandon, number 9, Tom Gugliotta, number 8, Sam Mitchell, and 7, Ricky Rubio. Today, we're going to get right back into it with number 6. We'll then talk about number 5 and number 4. So without further ado, number 6 in our countdown is Sam Cassell, the point guard of the Timberwolves' run to the Western Conference Finals in 2004. Cassell was a little bit difficult to rank as well. He was definitely going to be in the top 10, and maybe I ranked him a little high, frankly. But clearly his peak was a lot higher than, say, Ricky Rubio, who he just beat out in the ranking, and also Sam Mitchell, who was a couple spots behind him. Cassell only spent 2 years with the team. And we also haven't ranked Jimmy Butler yet either, who basically spent one plus season with the team. But Cassell only spent 2 years with the team. His first year with the Wolves, he was an all-star and averaged overall over his 2 years with the Wolves, 17.2 points, 6.4 assists. He doesn't rank very high in team categories in history simply because he only spent those 2 years in Minnesota. Year one, he did play in 81 games. He made the only All-Star team of his career at age 34. In that season alone, he averaged 19.8 points, 7.3 assists. He also shot 39.8% from beyond the arc, so effectively 40%. That was his career best mark by far The previous year in Milwaukee, he shot 36%. That was his second best year. But beyond that, he was never really above a league average at best three-point shooter, and basically shot 40% from three with the Wolves in his all-star season. So it was truly his career season, a career high in points per game. It was, it looks like, about his fourth best year in terms of assists per game, career high in three-point percentage. It was also a career high in shooting percentage, 48.8%. He also was he's a career 86% free throw shooter, so shooting 87% from the line was no surprise. And he was just an all-around really solid player, clearly. I mean, he was the second best player on a finals team, or a conference finals team, I should say. And of course, as longtime Timberwolves fans will remember, his injury, his hip injury, is basically the reason the Wolves didn't get to the finals. They had that Lakers team on the ropes, but had an injured Sam Cassell. He had aggravated his injury in the Kings series. Of course, there's lots of rumors as to how he was injured. I don't think he was originally injured doing his infamous, big cojones dance, but I think he re-injured himself doing that in the Kings series and was not effective for the remainder of the playoffs. And if you look at his playoff totals that year, he played in 16 games, only started 15 in the playoffs because he had to have his role reduced a little bit because of that injury. So his getting hurt was a big issue in the playoffs for the Timberwolves. Overall, though, for his career in Minnesota, he was acquired as part of the Gary Payton deal that sent Gary Payton to Milwaukee. Milwaukee sent Sam Cassell to Minnesota, along with Irvin Johnson, who actually started at center during that playoff run for the Wolves. And the only players that the Timberwolves had to trade in this deal were Joe Smith and Anthony Peeler. And if you're trading, I mean, of course, both those guys are on this list that we talked through. Joe Smith was number 20. Peeler was, I think, number 18. So the Wolves were acquiring a 34-year-old point guard who was coming off of a solid season in Milwaukee, but they had no idea he was going to have a career year in Minnesota. And to only give up Peeler and Smith to get Cassell and a starting center and Irvin Johnson, albeit a limited starting center, that was a coup of a deal, one of the top couple of deals in Timberwolves history for sure. Cassell was just a huge part of what the Wolves did. I already rattled off all of his numbers. And unfortunately, his second year in Minnesota, he did battle injuries that entire time, ended up only playing in 59 games, starting just 38 and averaging 13.5 points, 5 assists. His three-point shooting percentage went all the way from 40% to 26%, and he only shot 46% from the floor. So unfortunately, his second year was it wasn't the worst year of his career, but it was significantly worse than his first year in Minnesota. Then after the 2004-05 season, the Wolves traded him and a first-round pick to the Clippers for Lionel Chalmers and Marko Jarić in what was probably the worst trade, certainly one of the worst two or three trades in Timberwolves history. So after acquiring him for basically, I don't want to say nothing because Peeler and Smith were solid players, but for a couple of fringe role players and getting him in a steal, going to the conference finals, him making an all-star team in his career year, the Wolves turned around and traded him, sold him low the following year, and gave up a first-round pick the Clippers later used to take Austin Rivers and to get Marko Jarić, who for some reason they thought would be a starter and who, frankly, was not. And then Cassell went on to play 2.5 years in L.A., was actually pretty good. His first year after the Wolves traded him, he averaged 17-6 and was back up to 36.8% shooting from three, which was his career best mark outside of that career year in Minnesota. So the Wolves, they clearly sold low. He had one more great year in him. He was then a backup for the most part in LA for another year and a half, finished his career in Boston with the Celtics with Kevin Garnett, as the Celtics went on to win a title that season, actually. So Cassell got a ring as a bench player for that Celtics team. And now he's actually an assistant coach with the Clippers. So went back to LA, this time with Doc Rivers, who of course was his coach in Boston. So Cassell, again, he had a peak in Minnesota. That peak was brief, but being the starting point guard on this team, the only team in franchise history that advanced past the first round of the playoffs, he had his career year in Minnesota. It's hard to ignore just how good he was for that season. And that's really enough to get him to this spot on the list. And because of where this team went, because of what Cassell did, I think that justifies it pretty easily. All right, before we get into number five on the list, I did want to mention our friends at MyBookie. Sports have come to a screeching halt with basketball benched and pitchers off the mound, but our friends at MyBookie aren't going to let it get you down. Stay sane and stay entertained with access to your favorite games like blackjack, roulette, slots, war, and more. It doesn't matter whether you're out on the front lines or quarantined at home, the fun doesn't have to come to an end with MyBookie. Video poker not your thing but still need a fix? They've got you covered with a host of live casino dealers online. That's right. They have professional dealers at their tables live on site 24/7. Is your favorite squad sidelined because of the pandemic? Don't even sweat it. MyBookie has partnered with some of the leading esports brands to bring you wagers on virtual action straight from the court in NBA 2K20. Plus, you can always do your part to make your bankroll great again by taking advantage of shifting odds on political bets. You can trust the industry leaders in times like these. They're reliable, upright, and best of all, they pay fast when you win. Visit mybookie.ag and use promo code LOCKEDONNBA for 150% bonus on your first casino deposit. That's promo code LOCKEDONNBA to receive a 150% cash bonus on your first deposit, and you can claim those extra funds all the way up to $750. Use promo code LOCKEDONNBA to activate the offer. That's promo code LOCKEDONNBA. You spin, you win, you get paid. All right, next up in our countdown is number five, after Sam Cassell at number six. Number five is none other than Jimmy Butler, coming in at number five in the best Timberwolves of all time. This is a perfect example of a player that's really tough to rank on a list of the best players in Wolves history. I talked about him off the top as my example of a player that's really difficult to rank because you could clearly say that he was the second best player at the peak of his powers to ever put on a Timberwolves uniform after the player who, spoiler alert, will be number one in Kevin Garnett. I mean, it's hard to argue that his peak wasn't better and what he did for the Wolves wasn't greater than some of the other guys we'll get to here shortly on this list. But between the way that he left and the fact he only played in 59 games in his one season in Minnesota and only 10 before he was traded in his second, the way he forced his way out, and then also, the short stint, a total of 69 games in a Timberwolves uniform, it's impossible to place him any higher than fifth on this list. That said, his peak in Minnesota in 2017-18 was awesome. It was his fourth consecutive All-Star appearance after making the All-Star team 3 years in a row in Chicago. He did miss the All-Star team the following year when he split it between Minnesota and Philadelphia, but was back on it again this year in Miami. And Jimmy, in his 1 year in Minnesota, scored 22.2 points per game, which was his second highest total in his career. Averaged 4.9 assists and 5.3 rebounds, shot 47.4% from the field, 35% from three, which is better than his career average. Of course, he's improved there a lot recently, although I guess this season in Miami, he's really struggling from deep, but shot 35% from three, got to the free throw line seven times a game, and was the best player on a team that squeaked into the playoffs on the last day. That said, I mean, this was a team that was any other year would have been an easy playoff team. They won 47 games and had to win on the last day by beating the Nuggets in game 82, which, of course, was a game that Butler was huge in. This was arguably Jimmy Butler's probably second or third best season in his career. He was awesome. He was a little bit less effective after he came back from his knee injury. You'll remember in February that year, he hurt his knee in Houston. It looked like it could be the worst. It ended up being a meniscus issue. He missed basically the rest of the regular season before coming back and appearing in the last couple of games and then obviously in the playoffs. But he was clearly a little bit slowed down by that injury, and it affected his, effectiveness for the team. And Minnesota had to rely a little bit more on Karl-Anthony Towns. He came back and played in the last three games of that regular season. He was on a minutes restriction after missing 20 or so games with his knee injury. He played at LA, played 22 minutes in a win. The Wolves blew out the Lakers, and then the Wolves played Memphis at home and again needed to win to keep the Nuggets at arm's length, and they blew out Memphis. He also only played 23 minutes in that game, only scored 15 points, wasn't needed. In the finale against Denver, a game that went into overtime, Butler played 41 minutes and scored 31 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, was huge down the stretch in that game, 10 of 13 at the free throw line, 10 of 21 from the field, and was the key to a huge victory that got the Wolves their first and only playoff berth in now the last 16 years, at the time the last 14 years. You look at the box score from that game, I mean, Towns had 26 and 14, Andrew Wiggins had 18 on only 9 shots. He had a really good game. Jimmy Butler was the key He's the one that got them there. There was a big shot by Jeff Teague, a big shot by Jamal Crawford down the stretch, but it was Jimmy Butler's 31-5-5 that led the Wolves to the playoffs in that one game. And then in the playoffs, the Wolves did win one game. They lost two in Houston, won the home game, and obviously Jimmy Butler was a really big part of that too. That one season was so good, and what he did for this team was so significant. And really the only time since the Wolves had Cassell and Garnett, it was the only time the Wolves have had two All-Stars on the same team. That has only happened, I think, one other time. That would have been Zerbiak and Garnett early in Zerbiak's career before that 03-04 team, before he started having injury issues. So this would be the only other time the Wolves had two All-Stars. Of course, Butler didn't play in that game, somewhat ironically, because he chose to sat out the All-Star game due to rest. He was there, he was on the bench, but he didn't play. And then, of course, got hurt just a couple of weeks later. And then was back on the All-Star team this year for the Eastern Conference and did play. So Jimmy Butler, clearly the second best all-around player in Wolves history, but he lands five on this list because of his truncated time in Minnesota and also the way that he left. I don't know that we need to rehash the whole thing. He forced his way out, was unhappy that the Wolves gave Andrew Wiggins a big extension and wouldn't commit to Jimmy Butler at market value ahead of time. The Wolves allegedly offered him an extension that was more favorable to the team. Butler was a little bit offended, I think is maybe a nice way of putting it, mostly because of the money that Wiggins was getting paid to kind of sleepwalk through some games. And so that would be what happened when Butler forced his way out. Butler was on NBA All Defense and All NBA Third Team in his year in Minnesota. He was in the early MVP conversation before his injury issues and before the team, you know, clearly wasn't going to be a top four or five team in the West and more of a trying to squeak in playoff seed. Really, he had the opportunity to stay in Minnesota and earn that long-term deal and build something with Karl Anthony Towns, but clearly that matchup wasn't going to work. Who knows if maybe Andrew Wiggins hadn't been on the roster, if maybe that would have turned out differently, but obviously Towns and Butler didn't get along super well either, and so it's probably best for everybody that the Wolves ultimately moved on. They did okay in the trade when they moved on from him, getting Dario Saric, getting Robert Covington, and getting Jared Bayless at the time, and only giving up Butler and Justin Patton. And the Wolves, of course, then flipped Saric to move up in the draft a few slots and picked Jared Culver this last year. They traded Robert Covington at the deadline in a larger deal that ultimately got them a couple of guys from the Nuggets and Malik Beasley and Juancho Hernan Gomez. And then Bayless's expiring contract was beneficial in the offseason to get some cap space back for the Wolves. So overall, it was a pretty decent haul for Jimmy Butler. It's probably about as good as they were going to do with the limited leverage that they had when they were ready to trade him. All right, next up, we're going to talk about number four on the list and then call it a day here on today's episode. All right, number four on our countdown of the top 20 Timberwolves of all time is Wally Zerbiak. Wally's World is number four. He spent seven seasons with the Timberwolves from 1999 to 2006. Overall, for his career in Minnesota, he averaged 15.5 points, 4.4 rebounds, 2.7 assists. He did make one All-Star team. You look at team history, we didn't do that with the last couple because Cassell and Butler were only with the team for 2 years, and frankly, they don't rank very high in those raw totals. Zerbiak is sixth in Timberwolves history in points. I was actually a little bit surprised he wasn't higher. Minutes played, Wally Zerbiak is number five. Rebounds, Zerbiak is number nine in Timberwolves history. Three-pointers made, Wally Zerbiak is number five. He's 43 ahead of Zach LaVine at number five, and about 100, it looks like 97 behind Kevin Love for number four on the list. Wally's World was a high draft pick for the Timberwolves. He was the sixth overall pick in the 99 draft, came in and started the majority of his games as a rookie, averaged 11.5 points and shot 36% from three. The following year, he became a full-time starter for the 2000-2001 Timberwolves team that won 47 games and got into the playoffs but lost to the Spurs, which was a common theme at that point in time. That year, Zerbiak averaged 14.5 rebounds, which was a career high in rebounds, shot only 34% from three. And then in his third season in the league, when he was 24 years old, is when Zerbiak broke out. He played all 82 games again, so consecutive years, started at all 82 games, and averaged a hair under 19 points, 18.7 points, 4.8 rebounds, 3.1 assists, shot 45.5% from three. Granted, this was a different era. He only attempted 2.3 threes per game, but shot 45.5 from beyond the arc and was a 51% field goal shooter. That's 3 years in a row to start his career. He averaged out to shooting 51%. And this is a guy who primarily shot jumpers. He would occasionally shoot out of the post. He had a turnaround jumper that he would shoot out of the post, but the vast majority of his shots were all jump shots. He didn't get to the rim all that often. And yet he was shooting over 50% from the field. He was that good of a shooter. And I think at the time, everybody was like, oh, he's a good shooter. But in hindsight, this holds up. He was a legitimately great shooter at that time. Unfortunately, Saunders and the Wolves kind of ran him into the ground. He started 82 games in consecutive seasons in 2000 to 2001, and then the 01-02 season, was an all-star in 01-02. And that Timberwolves team won 50 games and then was swept in the first round by the Dallas Mavericks and Dirk Nowitzki. After that, though, Zerbiak had injury problems. The rest of his career, he only played in more than 70 games in a season, or I should say more than 70 games in a season once until the very end of his career when he was kind of a fringe rotation player. The following season in 02-03, he played in just 52 games, had a heel issue that came up, still averaged 17.5 points. And then in the 03-04 season, when the Wolves went all the way to the conference finals, he only played in 28 regular season games, averaged 10 points, still shot 43.5% from three. In the playoffs that year, he did manage to play in, let's see, he played in 12 of the 18 playoff games and had more of a bit role, although his role increased as the playoffs went on. He played 25 minutes a game. So his role did increase. He averaged 12 points, 3.5 rebounds, 1.7 assists, and shot 34.5% from three. So he was an important member of the rotation on those playoff teams, and his role maybe was forced to increase a little bit by Sam Cassell's injury in terms of the scoring load that he took on. But he was much less a part of that team than I think maybe casual fans would remember. Remember, Latrell Sprewell was on the team at that point and needed to carry the load with Zerbiak injured for most of the season. We saw a lot of Trenton Hassell, who was a very good defender, a poor offensive player. Then Sam Cassell handled the ball a lot in the backcourt. Troy Hudson played a little bit as well. That was kind of it. And then the following year, Zerbiak did play in 81 games, but he only started about half of them. Latrell Sprewell was still on the team. Zerbiak's scoring average bounced back to 15.5 points a game, still shot 37% from three, and then was off to a really great start. The first half of the 05-06 season was averaging 20 points and 5 rebounds a game, shooting 40% from three, and the Wolves chose to trade him in light of, in lieu of giving him another extension. He went to Boston and had a great rest of the season there for a Boston team that only won 33 games. It was kind of an interesting trade. And then Boston moved on from him following the next year when he was hurt. He split the rest of his career with Seattle and then finished with Cleveland in 08-09 with LeBron James' Cleveland team that won 66 games, but then lost to the Magic in the Eastern Conference Finals. Of course, the Magic then went on to lose in the finals. So Zerbiak almost got a ring there at the end of his career and retired after only playing through age 31. It was kind of an early finish, and despite his injuries, he kind of had a strong finish there as a rotation player on a good playoff team, playing alongside LeBron James. The trade when Zerbiak was moved to Boston was a huge trade. The Wolves moved him, Dwayne Jones, and Michael Olowokandi, as well as a first-round pick to the Celtics for Marcus Banks, Mark Blunt, Ricky Davis, Justin Reed, and a couple of second-round picks. Interestingly, the first-round pick they traded to Boston ultimately came back to Minnesota via Washington. That was the pick that the Wolves then used to take Johnny Flynn, which we already talked about the Flynn over Curry just last week on this podcast. But that was that same pick that went to Boston. You may recall the Wolves had an affinity, and Kevin McHale, it seemed like, really liked Ricky Davis. They tried to sign him as a restricted free agent a couple of years before when he was with Cleveland, and they didn't get him. For some reason, this trade, and I'd have to dig back into the details as to where Zerbiak's contract was at this exact moment, but clearly the Wolves felt like this was, rather than paying Zerbiak, the move was to move on from a guy who was often injured and get a guy like Ricky Davis, who was younger with some more upside. Ultimately, Zerbiak still had a better couple of years in him than Davis really provided the Timberwolves, as Davis was more of a needed the ball in his hands more often. Zerbiak was content to catch and shoot and be a second or third option in the offense. That didn't work out as well with Davis. Zerbiak went on to, as I mentioned, have a strong rest of the year in Boston. Well, he was injured a lot the next year. He was still kind of a fringy rotation player and was strong at the latter stages of his career. Knee issues, heel issues, those were the main reasons why Zerbiak was only a fringe member of the rotation in the conference final season in 03 and 04. But Zerbiak's peak in the early part of his career, his multiple years of shooting over 50% from the field, 40% from three. For his Timberwolves career, he was a 40.4% three-point shooter and shot exactly 50% from the field over seven seasons in Minnesota. Those are significant numbers. At times was the second option next to Garnett. At times was the third or lower option. For instance, when both Sprewell and Cassell were on the roster, Zerbiak was seen as more of a bench scorer and a role player, sharpshooter type guy than anything else. But whatever role he was in, he was a solid enough rebounder. He was a good enough defender to play within the team defensive concept. And he never really had terrible defensive metrics surrounding him. He was always okay, and the Wolves could stick him on, you know, the other team's second best scoring wing or something like that, and it worked out. So the peak, the role he played in some good Timberwolves teams, the fact he made an all-star team with the Wolves, all of those things play into him being number four on this list and edging out guys like Jimmy Butler and Sam Cassell, because longevity and overall consistency over that period of time, as well as a good peak, are the reasons why he lands at number four. All right, in tomorrow's episode on Wednesday, we're going to talk the top three. You probably know what three they are, but maybe the order will surprise you. So we'll talk through the top three players in Timberwolves history on Wednesday. All right, that's all we have for you today. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. That wraps up this edition of Locked On Wolves. Now, tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of Rejecting the Screen. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.